apostrophe. I-T-W-I-T. H-D-A-N-N-Y. And J-E-N-N-Y. Doing it with Danny and Jenny. Doing it with Danny and Jenny.
Boom.
Wow. Boom. Wow. Thank you again, Eli Braden, for our theme song. We thank you every time it plays, and it's still not enough. That's how good that song is.
It's so damn good. It's emotional. It's I like it. You know what else makes me emotional, Danny?
Your cycle?
It. Bingo, bitch. You know she does. She's a feisty little bee. But you know who else makes me happy besides my psych?
Well, they're one and the same, I guess. But your cycle and...
And, well, I call my cycle Billy Corbin.
The great Billy Corbin.
No, y'all, everyone, okay, this is a return guest. We love him. He's our friend. He has an amazing documentary out on Hulu called God Forbid. Amazing. Billy Corbin, everyone.
God forbid. I felt like I told you the title of it. God Forbid on Hulu. It's a great, great documentary. But even apart from that, it's tight. It's one movie about a subject, and it is not, as certain other documentaries are tending to do now, stretching a 45-minute story into 20 hours of documentary. And this was just so brilliant what you did with this. I mean, Billy Corbin, thank you so much for coming back.
Yes.
Thank you. Well, I'm just, we haven't talked about this yet. So I'm just here for your compliments. I'm here for your.
We suck up like no one. No one sucks up as good as Danny.
But it was so for those who haven't seen God Forbid on Hulu, which you really should, it is the story of the taking down of Jerry Falwell Jr. at Liberty University from the guy who cuckolded him intentionally, the pool boy.
Yeah.
I actually think the working title was the pool boy for a while. Am I wrong?
It was, yeah. And then we had this conversation with Giancarlo in the interview. Part of it is in the doc.
Yeah.
And his sister, Lilia, his older sister, who we interviewed as well, who was there. She's 7 years older. So she's more of like a confidant and like mentor and friend. So like, cause he told her that he was going to meet up with this older couple more than twice his age and have sex with the wife while the husband watched. Like, I don't know that if I had an older sister, I'd run right home and tell her. But I have a little brother and I don't think he would tell me if that was gonna happen. But anyway, you know, they talked about how he, you know, the pool boy, like he just, he looked at it as like an epithet, you know, it was like something that like he felt infantilized him and really, and I actually likened it to, and his sister did too, this is a deleted scene, but she likened the situation to that of Monica Lewinsky, where you not only had this power disparity with the couples and this young person, but you also had like their PR machine that attempted to like crush and destroy the reputation of this young person. But then you also have this once private individual with like three Google hits, if you Googled him, his Twitter, his Instagram, and his LinkedIn. Now all of a sudden you Google him and it's pool boy this, pool boy that. And the one job he had for 1 year when he was 20 years old, he is forever branded, just like Monica Lewinsky. We're like, oh, the intern, right? So it's like, it was a very, and I understood that. And he was like, I don't know that I want to be in a documentary called The Pool Boy. And I'm like, yeah, I feel you.
I totally respect that. I totally respect, it is amazing. You talk about the privacy issue. What you made, because again, I followed this when it happened live without knowing any of the details in between, much as we did with Monica Lewinsky. I mean, I've often thought, I was a comedy writer on Late Night during the time of her stuff. And I've done a real accounting of the kinds of jokes I wrote because and seen it there, so that you did it in real time. But what you're really able to do was show just the courage it took for this guy, the risks he took. You really set up the power structure of these people And in a way that I did not, I when just watching the story, I hadn't thought about it in that way. And I
liken the story or the doc anyway to it's the movie Get Out meets The Righteous Gemstones. Yeah. Like, you know, Giancarlo is like honey trapped into this world of power, privilege, religion. He's brought into this inner circle of the Falwells. He is literally rubbing shoulders with the most powerful people in the friggin' world.
Yeah.
And there's red flags along the way, and increasingly sure. more so and bigger. But then he eventually gets to that point where he's like, I got to get the hell out of here. Right. Like, and so,
yeah.
the idea that within 6 months of meeting them, and he meets them, the yeah. president and first lady of the largest Christian university in the world, he meets them. He's 20 years old, working as a pool attendant at the beautiful, luxurious Fontainebleau Hotel
yeah.
in Miami Beach, one of the most famous hotels in the world. And he gets propositioned by this woman more than twice his age, who he helped set up her like bed. They had like these round beds, you know, next to the right. pool that, you know, and yeah. he was bringing her drinks and whatever, food. And she's flirting with him and then propositions him. And then the catch is, yeah, you might come up to my room later after your shift. My husband likes to watch. And so 6 months after that, at Liberty University in the fall of 2012, meeting Donald Trump backstage in the green room, shaking his hand in this incredibly awkward picture with Jerry and Becky looking up, like kind of in the background while he's shaking hands with Donald Trump. And he's on a private personal tour of Liberty University given by the president, you know, by Jerry and Becky with Donald Trump, his entourage, which included Michelle Bachmann and Michael Cohen, of course, his right-hand yes, man and fixer.
Right.
But like, and he's there with this copy of Art of the Deal get autographed by Donald Trump. This kid, because he was raised as a conservative Cuban-American Catholic boy in Miami, and was like, and like, this was like,
no, this was dream. This was like the, you know, for people who weren't particularly intellectually curious, this was like what you thought a business tycoon was. It was like, yeah. he was the character. I mean, he was always a caricature of that to people who knew,
yeah.
but he had successfully parlayed that into, you know, into a thing. And certainly The Apprentice yeah. helped that a lot.
It's yeah. like, it's like if the Monopoly Man had syphilis.
I always,
you know, that was really, you know,
I use the Monopoly Man all the time. This is why I love it.
but even more extraordinarily is that 11 months after meeting them poolside at the Fontainebleau, he's now 21. He can legally drink now, yeah. but he is also a real estate millionaire. Because Jerry Falwell Jr. has purchased a $4.65 million commercial real estate with a business in it for Giancarlo to run, to give him something to do during the day. And he's left the Fontainebleau Hotel, and he's now got a 20, almost 25% stake in this $4.65 million property that he co-owns with Becky Falwell, who has 50.1%. Jerry Falwell III, who they call Trey, their yeah. oldest son, Jerry and Becky's oldest son, who has 25%. And then Giancarlo has 24.9% of a building that has a very popular Italian restaurant, Macchialina, to this day. It used to have a liquor store. And then it had on top was what Politico referred to as a, quote, gay friendly flop house, end quote, which is a come all, come everyone, youth
come
hostel.
Everywhere. Yeah.
Come, oh, thank you. You beat me to it, damn it, Jenny.
Thank you. I should chime in. I'm sorry. I felt like I was being quiet. I apologize.
God damn it. I was literally winding up to come anywhere.
I caught you in mid cough. I was like, ah, Jenny, I can come everywhere.
Jenny, this the sniper there. The Jerry Falwell in the corner, and then all of a sudden just comes right at us.
I'm never going to beat Jenny to a jizz joke ever.
No, no. Try all day long, my friend. Good luck. But, no, but go ahead, Billy.
No, I mean, that's it. I mean, like, this guy, you know, is living his dream. And let's be real, Jerry and Becky were living their dream in Miami, too. They were living their best lives. And that's the important thing about this, is that no one wants to kink shame them. In fact, they seem wonderful. Like, they seem fabulous. Like, yeah. I'd want to party with those people.
Sure. But you, here's the thing. What you do so well in the documentary is, it's because it clearly isn't kink shaming.
No.
You're out, and you lay that in. What becomes the problem is laying down those incredible incredibly restrictive rules at Liberty University, and the holy roller thing that Jerry Falwell Jr. had managed to avoid for a very long time, and then got sucked into that power situation, and embraced it so wholeheartedly, and the hypocrisy, and the people he hurt, while doing all this. You constructed that really well. It wasn't.
Well, Jerry Jr. was by training and trade a real estate lawyer.
Yeah.
And he turned Liberty University into what some of the students described as not a Christian university, but a real estate hedge fund for Jerry Falwell Jr. And he became very wealthy and very powerful, and practically owns the aptly named Lynchburg, Virginia. But he and amassed this real estate portfolio using maybe some of his money, some of Liberty's money. No one really knows. It was a big gray area there ever since Papa Falwell founded the place. But but Jerry loved Donald Trump because Donald Trump was more than that, right? He wasn't just a boring real estate magnate. He was this larger than life character who could say anything, do anything, had a lot of power and a lot of sway. And so Jerry Jr. wanted to be Donald Trump is really
Donald Trump could be holier than thou, but also was like, cheating on his wife. It was like he found a kindred spirit, at least, in like a degenerate.
But also Donald Trump didn't, at the beginning anyway, didn't have to pretend. He was a piece of shit, and he was proudly a piece of shit. And so, but Jerry Jr. had to put on these airs of being like at least the son of a man of God, in like, when Falwell Sr. died in 07, he split the business, basically. His youngest son, Jonathan Falwell, who was a preacher, a man of God, a true believer, he put him in charge of the ministry of the Thomas Road Baptist Church. And Jerry Jr. took over the business of the university.
Wow.
And so he knew that temperament-wise, like that there was going to be a split, a division of responsibility here. And Jerry Jr. never really wanted to be a religious leader, but I'll be damned if he didn't love the power and the money that the pulpit brought him.
You watch it happen. And the other thing that was so fascinating, and I have so many questions about this because watching it was just how quickly Jerry Jr. throws his wife under the bus in a way. And they're still together, right?
Yeah.
So
yeah, I mean, they're tight.
Yeah. They're business partners at this point. They're not breaking up that.
You have to clear that. Like these guys, the humiliation kink alive in both of them is so strong because obviously he can watch his wife be satisfied by somebody else, all that way. But she can allow herself to be the one who's like the slut, basically.
And that was apparently the scheme all along. And I don't think it was just Jerry's idea. The two of them are like, we interviewed Megan K. Stack who profiled them post scandal and spent a lot of time with them and describes their marriage today, like they're just then, but she's like I've never seen two married people who were that intertwined with each other, like where they just finished each other's all these decades later, like where they finished each other's sentences, where like they would kind of I'd call and they'd put me on speaker, whoever I call, and like they would talk together. Like there was just an absolute mind meld, between the two of them. And she just thought it was a very unique, particularly after what they've been through, a very unique bond.
So they probably have like a joint email account too, probably.
Yeah.
Like, come fuck us.
And it was also a time like when Becky calls her and she's like, listen, I'm in the car.
Yeah.
I wanted to call you when I was away from Jerry so that we could talk.
Yeah.
And Megan said, she believed that Jerry wasn't there, but she believed that that was something that they had plotted together so that they could, that she could ingratiate herself to the reporter to be like, now we're like best. And everybody said that about Becky. She's like wonderful, warm, like this. You meet her once and you're like BFFs. You're like girlfriends. You're like, you're gossip and you're just like, she just has this wonderful way. Like the perfect politician's wife, really, in that way. The perfect first lady.
Yeah.
Yes. So, but people really liked her. Especially
Really?
young men really took to her.
Well, so this is what I thought at the end of this. I thought like the big burden for these two, obviously, was it's not this lifestyle, it was that it was the juxtaposition of what they were representing. Now, on some level, do you believe Jerry and her and Becky, do you believe that they are, because now they can do whatever they, I mean, it does strike me that they have no image to maintain. Do you think that they're like, is there a part of them that's happy right now? Like I have no reason to believe that they're not continuing.
Yeah.
When you're into something, you're into something. That's how I believe it.
Yeah.
Honestly, I think that if they were younger and in better health, like,
Oh,
yeah,
that's true.
they probably would have been like, there is some element, and we address this, like, perhaps of self-sabotage here, where just
Yeah.
like they were so brazen that maybe it was just like, fuck it, you know, like it was some sort of kamikaze act at this point because like they couldn't live openly live the life they wanted to live. But they had it so cozy, dude.
That's
All
true.
their children were employed, all their daughters-in-law were employed by the
By the way,
university. Yeah.
how gross is it how they in the pictures of him with the kids, like
That
and
is
all the way through. And I was wondering, because obviously none of them would come forward for the documentary, but do you have any like when the children found out that this was what was going on, so that guy you brought to the wedding, your apprentice basically, was fucking mom. Was there any repercussions to that between the kids? Do you know anything about that?
So when he met them, the two sons were adults already. The daughter was a little younger, but grew up obviously over the 10 years that they were in this, or 7 years that they were in this relationship, the secret cuckold threesome relationship together.
Yeah.
Giancarlo actually attended the sons' weddings
Oh,
within about a year or
wow.
so. We only addressed the one because we had all the photos and videos of him there
Yeah.
that we could corroborate and confirm. But he went to both sons' weddings,
I hope he made a toast.
and had and he had yeah, with this, well, you know, at a Jewish wedding they lift you up on a chair. This wedding they turn the chair upside down, and then sat. So anyway, so the
We're not cutting that out, by the way. That is staying in. Your joke about the chair legs going up somebody's butt is staying in. I just
that
want you to
will
know that.
yeah that's gonna be a promo clip for this episode.
I gotta leave that to Jenny from now on. I'm gonna, Jenny, what I'm gonna do is I'm gonna start texting you my jokes, and you can then just do them for me because.
I have to say, I will say one thing about this is I did not think, because I didn't know going into it, like when it was still originally called The Pool Boy, like how he was going to come across. I thought y'all did a great job of, he did not come across poorly. He was very honest. His sister was my favorite person of
By far.
all time. I'm like, I don't know
Yeah.
what he would do without her. Like, she was the most stable individual
I don't
in
know what I
everything
would do
she's.
without her.
No, but I agree with that. I think that without her voice, you maybe don't have a doc in a way.
She was so much
Months.
credibility. Like, she gave
It
him
took me
cred.
8 months to get that interview.
Wow,
Well, you nailed it.
it
Worth it.
so
I
helps.
didn't, she came around. I mean, like, it wasn't up to me, you know? Like,
Well, it's it.
I didn't convince her. I couldn't, you know? Like, when she says, I'm a private person, I don't want to have anything to do with this, I don't want to be on camera talking about my little brother's sex life, I'm like, I have no argument. Like, I have
No, of
no,
course not.
you know, like, you're right. Like, you know, but she called me, and she's like, I think, you know, I'm sorry, I called her. I was like, just checking in. We're gonna wrap this up, you know, pretty soon. Like, any further thoughts? And she did, and
Do you
she's
think
my
that,
voice. She's my voice, like
no,
my surrogate voice in the
that's
doc.
what it
She was,
feels like.
do you feel like she did that since it took 8 months? Like, she was doing it just to get his back, like just to get her brother's back on this? Like, do you think
Well,
that's why she did it?
so we, yeah, it's a good, like, a lot of this since the Falwells obviously did not give us an interview. This is a lot of, you know, it feels like this is his telling of the story, right?
Yeah.
But we, needless to say, we and our lawyers did not take his word for anything. I mean, this was fact checked and refact checked and corroborated and cross checked, and things that I believed him, but we couldn't corroborate, didn't make, you know, the cut. Like, he provided us copious amounts of text messages, the vast majority of which did not make the cut. He provided us emails, photos, videos, a tiny fraction of which is excerpted at the end of the doc, the least explicit passages of which are excerpted at the end of the doc. But that went on for 2 years. I mean, we interviewed him for about 4 or 5 days on camera, but the vetting and my phone calls and the lawyering, like, that went on for 2 years. So the way he talks about being put through the ringer by Reuters, you know, to like, yeah, over the summer of the 20s, yeah, like, we put him through that all over again on steroids. And so I think his sister, like, realized that, like,
you were doing due diligence.
And he needs all the help he can get, just in terms of like someone co-signing and someone saying, I was there, I learned about, I saw some of this myself, I was an eyewitness, and some of it I can corroborate contemporaneously because he was confiding in me. I think she knew that someone needed to come to support him.
Yeah, and it really played out. Now, the question I want, clearly you went, I'm sure you tried to get Michael Cohen in this. I'm sure, like,
I talked to him.
But this is what I liked about this doc, because we're right now in a state of mind where obviously the enemy of my enemy is my friend, and I understand that completely.
Mea culpa, du Bois, mea culpa.
But you did a very good job of reminding us who it Michael Cohen at least was in this scenario. And and I found it, I'm just reading between the lines, because I've always felt like we are elevating him too much. I'm glad he's doing this, what he's done, and I'll take it every step of the way. But let's not deify him because he is, or canonize him in any way, because he, and you did a really good job of that. But what was very damning to me was his absence from your documentary, which to me, in a way, confirms some stuff that I feel about him.
Yeah. So, yes, I would rather him be on our side, right? Yeah.
Yes,
like,
course.
Yes.
Yeah.
That said, however, you know, like yeah, yes, I, like, let's keep this in perspective here. Like, you know, I, he's not a hero. I don't think he would say that he's a hero.
No.
I think there is a tendency to say that some of the people who escaped to deify some of the people who have escaped from that cult. But it's one thing when you have escaped from a cult as a victim or follower of said cult. It's another thing when you escape from that cult in
as a
position
a hitman
that he was in, to do real damage to the people, to the country, to the, you know.
Wasn't he called a fixer or whatever? Like, wasn't that his nickname?
A hitman. He was an enforcer. That's what he was. Yeah.
And that he could get those two thugs to, like, drop their fucking case, like, because that should have been the end of the goddamn story right there.
Yeah.
But that Trump gets the nomination and gets going this way, and that Michael Cohen has the power to thwart those two who are going to expose the relationship well before Trump's presidency is wild.
So what happens for people who haven't seen it yet, of course, is that this big major duty real estate transaction turns into a lawsuit, or the threat of a lawsuit initially, from a former friend of Giancarlo, the pool attendant, and that the kid's father, who is a former, now unlicensed, bankrupt real estate hustler in Miami. And it turns acrimonious, and they start to threaten action, which would obviously be a public record, and that through this legal public record, they would reveal what they believe to be the true nature of the relationship between Giancarlo and the Falwells, which wasn't just the real estate partnership, and that they had photographic evidence to prove that relationship was more intimate. And so it becomes this kind of veiled threat of, if you don't settle this dispute before it goes public, then everybody's going to learn everything about this. Yeah. And so that's when Jerry Jr. calls in his Michael Cohen, who he met in the fall of 2012,
right,
when Giancarlo went to meet Donald Trump at Liberty University. And he basically says, we're getting trouble from these guys. Can you make this go away? And in fact, for several years, he successfully made them go away. And I talked to Michael Cohen on the foot, not on camera, obviously, but about this episode. But one thing I want to say about those two guys, the Fernandezes, is that they may very well be the heroes of this story, because if not for them, as you said yes. yourself, the story should have ended right there. But if not for them later emerging from the shadows and taking action and actually filing a lawsuit against the Falwells and Giancarlo, we would not be having this conversation.
Yes. They were early adopters. And honestly, like,
they were like the Winklevoss twins, yeah, right?
Not to do a commercial for your other documentary, Screwball, but I felt like Giancarlo has a little Porter in him, but with a little bit, like, just a little bit, because again, it's somebody you underestimate who brings it down. And I'll add to that, to do a commercial for doing it with Danny and Jenny, we're going to take a break right now. And I just want to say, maybe my best segue ever into a commercial.
Doing It Nation, buckle up, because Bet Online remains your number one source for all your sports betting for football and basketball this season.
You'll always find, that was a good windup, the latest odds. You're going to learn matchup info. I'm doing it very naturalistic, like I'm not reading. That's why I'm doing these pauses. You're also going to learn player news and game trends at BetOnline.
Always your continued source for sports wagering information. BetOnline features live betting, free contests, and live scores for almost any sport or game imaginable.
Look, guys, I'm going to level with you. We're the fastest and easiest way to bet your favorite NFL, NBA, NHL, MMA, tennis, boxing, and even, get ready, golf games and events.
Head to betonline.ag. Yeah, you heard me right. Betonline.ag to join and receive your 50% welcome bonus with your first deposit. Make sure to use promo code CLNS50, that is CLNS50, to receive all your rewards.
CLNS50.
CLNS50.
It's that easy to remember. CLNS50. I mean, CLNS50. It rolls off the tongue.
Yeah, so that's actually, when I go to the ATM, guess what my passcode is?
I know.
CLNS50.
I'm glad you changed it from 1234. Bet Online. It's where the game starts.
It is where the game starts.
That's the tagline. And we're back. But Jenny, you were saying that you were picking up Porter vibes as well.
Yeah, Porter Fisher from Screwball. Yeah. I was texting Billy as I'm watching. God forbid. I'm like, I'm picking up major Porter vibes. I'm getting the major, like, this is going to be the person that just implodes this whole dynasty. Like, one person, sort of like the least expecting individual.
Yeah, there's like that naive earnestness, right? Yeah. Like to him that sort of. But there's also this like malevolent, like hint of malevolence.
I mean, Giancarlo is not as guileless as Porter was, but I do find, like, in all of these sort of tragedies and the bring downs, you know, when you talk about like people committing a crime and getting sloppy at one point, and it's always that thing, you know, they took down Al Capone on tax evasion. You know, it's like they like these things, it's always the small thing. Like, you'll cover the DNA evidence and it's the fucking small thing. So,
you know, we and there was more Screwball-esque shit in there. The cast of characters surrounding the Fernandezes were so hilarious. It really did. There was an opportunity there to kind of expand on that, but it took us away from the core of the story. And what we couldn't ever really nail down and corroborate was, how did the Fernandezes get the photos? So very much in Screwball fashion, there's this heist movie element to it, but we weren't able to crack it. And we made the decision, obviously for runtime reasons as well, to sort of to focus the plot the way that we did. But there's a lot of me in my, and like Screwball, it's this butterfly effect story, right? Of like a butterfly flaps its wings in Miami and it changes kind of the course of of world events, whether it's the history of Major League Baseball, the future of the free world in this game. Like, literally this cuckold threesome between a 20-year-old pool attendant and this middle-aged couple at the Fontainebleau, like, may very well have determined the last two presidential elections.
And to that end, Billy, like, when you were first telling me about this, like, when we were talking, we were all out one night, and you were talking about it in the larger context of the relationship and this, like, come to Jesus moment, pardon the expression,
yeah,
for Giancarlo. But he very credibly presents a case that the Trumpism and all of that it entailed, and how he was complicit and did something about it. It's like, that's what we want these people to do. And people who are savvier and more worldly mostly have not done that. I mean, sure, there's been like the Liz Cheney and the Kinzinger and the people who've gone against him. But like people, like I would suggest that Lindsey Graham is a person who is savvier than Giancarlo. I would suggest, and yet to sort of double down on this in a way. I can't wait for your documentary on Lindsey Graham, by the way. Please make that happen.
Oh my.
Yeah, because I want to know what happened on that golf course. He hated Donald Trump, went to Bedford one weekend, came back, loved Donald Trump. What did they show him? Because I don't care what was on a tape that incriminated Lindsey Graham. Nothing could be more embarrassing than his behavior since then. So I need to know all this stuff. I'm sorry, I'm ranting.
No. That man has publicly humiliated himself for years, and inexplicably, like, because he was right on the money during the primary, during the 2016 primary.
And the first year into his presidency.
He was
negative, and now, like, he's BFFs with Herschel Walker. It's like,
I mean, they the video, that the blackmail video must be epic. That's all I can say. It must be next level blackmail video of Lindsey Graham.
It has to be. And a lot of people saying it's because he's with kids, but I'm not going to say that because that's a legend. And I refuse, and I'm not going to incriminate you. And I don't believe that, but I'm hearing that.
In 2016, in our office in Miami Beach, we shared an office area with, like, where Roger Stone used to have his office.
No.
Like right down the hall. Right. And so all of the mail comes into this, like, kind of central area, and then all the tenants come and we pick up our mail. So one day we get, this is 2016, we get some mail into our office, and we're going through it, and my producing partner Alfred Spellman finds, like, one of those, like, manila envelope with, like, the built-in, like, bubble wrap, like, almost like,
yes,
kind of,
yeah,
the,
yeah,
shape,
yeah.
Yeah, like the shape of probably, like,
I know
a,
exactly
a small
the
book
kind you're talking,
like,
about.
Yeah.
Yes.
Like, a bit. So, and he looks at it, he goes, oh, it was addressed to Roger. And so he takes it over to, it's about the size, I was like, for those of your audience of a certain age, a VHS tape, roughly, the packaging. And so we give it to our landlord and said, oh, this came for Roger. You want to forward this to him in Fort Lauderdale, wherever he is now. And then later that year, Alfred goes, that was the Moscow piss tape.
It had to be.
Oh, we're like, but now I'm wondering if maybe it wasn't Lindsey Graham.
LG.
Special episode of The Golden Girls.
Yeah.
Shower Girls, if you will.
Oh, fantastic. That's okay. Bravo. And bravo beating Jenny to that Golden Shower Girl.
I know. I'm embarrassed. I was taking a sip of my drink, and then he got me.
I've never been more proud of you. Like, I love Cocaine Cowboys. Nothing compares to you just doing that piss joke. So there you go.
And a Miami related piss joke, no less. And I think my dumbest and also simultaneously most underrated shtick on social media is that whenever I see a tweet about Lindsey Graham, it doesn't matter where or who or what, I reply with a gif of Blanche from the Golden Girls. Like every single time.
And I think I actually DM. I love that so much when you do that. I'm a fan of that.
I'm so petty.
Oh, me too.
Oh, so petty. I'm Richard Petty.
Is there anything you're currently, because obviously you, when you're the kind of person who, when you are working on one thing, you have the next thing brewing. Is there something in the works that you can talk about?
Not
And if
really.
not now, afterwards?
Yeah, I mean, I will come back here anytime. Yeah, we're I want to do a dramatic adaptation of God Forbid and call it Cuckold Cowboys is what I'm
Oh, that's
hoping
amazing.
hoping to do. Maybe we'll turn it into a series.
Yeah.
But no, we're like, what's incredible about, and it's, a really weird time in our industry. It seems like a Wall Street is trying to like dismantle it slowly but surely. But incredibly also, we have like this, a God Forbid is they just announced what, like last week, that it's the most watched doc in Hulu history.
That's
Uh,
awesome.
yeah,
And it
and
should
it
be because it's really, really,
it's
really, and I'm not
brilliant.
just saying this because I love you. It's like this is truly like a special, special documentary. And it's bigger than just the cuckold story. It actually like history turns on the events of this. And I know I don't mean to be hyperbolic, but I really mean it. It's like it's by removing liberty that removing that evangelical machine from 20 the 2020 election by virtually cutting off its balls and like not letting it be there, it really, really helped Biden win.
And what was kind of interesting to me, like, not to harp on the first act, but like also like, and this was a pod we had to cut. I didn't know what a cuckold until about 2015, 2016, during that cycle,
Same.
when someone called me one on Twitter because I was clearly not supporting Donald Trump.
Yeah.
And so, libtard, cuck, whatever.
Yeah.
I get, and so I made the terrible mistake of Googling it. And so to discover what I thought was just kind of richly ironic, and now there's like articles and think pieces since then about how cuck became like this right-wing insult of the left. And it's always like and it pretty this is obviously a lesson, a moral of the or a lesson of the Trump era, is that every accusation is a
There's
confession, right?
completely. I
So
said, so I wrote this in my book about the Trump war. It's like literally like everything they accuse you of. It's and there's a reason why these people think about cuckolding so much. There's a reason why pedophilia is at top of the mind with
When
these people.
when they
Because
say you're sheeple, you're sheep, it's like you're literally in a flock. Like that's what you call. You're like you are just following whatever some crazy person on a pulpit says. Like, what are you talking about?
they've managed to make Trump derangement syndrome a thing that we have, not you following this like per this empty narcissistic C minus student who
A
cares nothing
psychopath.
about you. Like, who's deranged here?
Yeah,
I just
and the fucked up thing is like with watching like God Forbid, and it all implodes. And the people who believed in Liberty University and believed in Trump, all that shit comes out in the wash, and they're like, "Well, what about the Clintons? Look what they did." Like they just
They're
blame shit.
still doing Hunter Biden's laptop. It's like,
Yeah,
it's.
By the way, I found another one. I have it here. Another
Yeah, another.
laptop I have here. I just but
Oh.
no. But I'll tell you, Jenny, I kind of felt, and Giancarlo did too, felt a little bad for like the Liberty community, because there's some true believers there, and there's parents who sent their children to be educated in a Christian institution, and now they're like the value of their diploma and the quality of their education. I mean, it's just like because of these people, it's not there.
I felt the same way when I watched Happy Valley, the Penn State, the
Yes,
whole
I agree.
Sandusky thing. And those kids that were on it that are like, great, my whole life I dreamed of going to Penn State. I get into Penn State and now it's a fucking joke. Now my degree, wipe my ass with it. Like, that's how
And
I
look,
feel for those poor Liberty University
I
students.
feel exactly the same way, and it's always been the case, especially with Trumpism, that there are, as much as I hate him and as much as harm he's done to us, there's no group of people he harms more than the people who believe in him. Like it always, like I'm never going to give a penny to him. And they're like, they're his emails 4 times a day, which are just
Oh,
being
me
used to
too.
fight these legal. Like he hates them so much. You can even see it in his rallies. At his rallies, when he's there, he's like, oh, this guy, I said at a rally. He's like, oh, someone like, if you put on a little weight there, he can't help but talk about how fat and ugly his supporters are.
Well, that's the thing. His supporters are his victims. He's a grifter, and they are his. There is marks. They are his marks.
There's a sadness to it when you look at these people because they truly believe they're doing the right thing. Like, yes. They fully think that the people against them are evil and terrible. They don't realize they're like on the side of a fucking crazy person.
Giving their money to a billionaire who says he doesn't need anybody's money because he's a billionaire. And that's the sad, sick reality, I think, of this Trump era, is that for all the demagoguery and the racism and the hate and the real harm of it, it's all just a fucking heist movie. He's just Hans pretending to care about these political prisoners while he's fucking robbing Nakatomi Plaza. Like, that's all. That's all it is. It's money. It's a grift.
I know it is. And I tweeted this, like, now I'm that person who quotes his own tweets. But I actually said when Biden won was I said to, like, the Trump supporters, you may not know it, but you also won. Like, and I mean that, like, from the, like, in the way, like, it's so fucking true. I mean, but they'll never, you know, it's religion to them. But anyway. Well,
and listen, but I want to make that point, though, too, I've been saying this a lot, like, on the campaign trail for this documentary, but it's an important point, is that this documentary, God forbid, is not about Christians and Christianity. It is about the people who exploit Christians and Christianity, yes, for power and profit.
Yeah, and that comes really across clear. 1,000%. It definitely comes across.
You make that really clear, and it's not a screed. This is not like a Bill Maher going after religion. This is not it's not one of those things where you're, it has nothing to do with that. It actually is, like, it's pretty sad. I mean, you even point out in one point that there was somebody in, I think this is from the documentary, but it was like that somebody came out against Donald Trump and was like that was the last person.
Oh, yeah. It was like, I mean, the board of trustees, usually like the president of a university answers to the board. Here he's like Goldfinger. He has like a button he pushes and like the floor drops out and you just, you know, the guy, you never see the guy. And this was a guy who was longtime booster of the university, a donor. Yeah. He was his father, Jerry Sr.'s right hand man. The guy had been at the university as long, if not longer, than Jerry Jr. had. And the second he said, listen, I don't believe that Donald Trump represents Christian values, and I don't know that we as a nonprofit Christian institution should be electioneering for him. And that was it. That was the end of him. Nobody ever heard from him again.
He disappeared. Well, Billy, it's like, is there something else in the barrel you want to talk about, or not yet? You can't really talk about stuff you're working on next.
I mean, like, we just reviewed the 2023 slate, and there's 10 projects on it, like all sort of various stages of racing and crawling to a finish line, you know. I don't know which one's going to be next. You know, I just don't know. Yeah.
Well, I hope it's the one where, because I know you feel this way, that 9/11 was an inside job, and I'm hoping it's that one.
I don't see how. Okay, so here's a shtick I always wanted to do when I was which I'm not anymore on Facebook. There was a bit, and I thought this would make a great late night like desk bit, and I wanted to call it The Last Comment. That was the name of the bit, because one day, one of my last times ever on
Facebook,
which was like years ago. It's like Friendster and MySpace. It's like a lost civilization now for me. But I posted, local news article. I don't remember what the subject was.
Say that again. You cut out. Yeah. So you posted a what?
I posted the most benign local news story, Florida man local news story. I don't remember what it was, but you can imagine Florida man caught with mobile meth lab in Walmart men's room. You know, Florida man claim, Florida man tells cop cocaine they found during traffic stop flew in his open window on the highway. You know, like any number of, I don't know what it was. And underneath it was about like 86 comments, like for whatever reason, it was a funny story. So it kind of blew up and people started going back and forth and interacting with each other. So I'm like this comment. And then I start scrolling and I go to the last comment. And the last comment was, Robert, There is no conceivable way that jet fuel could possibly melt and burn at a sufficient temperature
to warp
metal to have brought down those. And I'm like, how the fuck did we get here? How the fuck? So the last comment, that was my guess, but like, how the fuck did we get to from Florida man, meth, whatever, like,
yeah,
to like some 9/11 fucking conspiracy. This is the level of discourse on social media.
You're reminding me of a bit that Ty Burrell told me. It was like first or second season of Modern Family. And he said, like, you know, he's on social media and it's like, you're reading the comments and they're all good. And you go through three pages and they're all good. And then we play the game called Press It Again. And so press it again, here's the game. You can leave right now and be happy. Or you can press it again. And if it's more good comments, you will feel no more happiness. But if there's even one bad comment, it will ruin everything. What would you like to do? And Ty says, and he thinks about it. He's like, I'd like to press it again. And he presses it again. And because that is our nature. But the fact that
it's a frog and the scorpion, isn't it?
It is. It's exactly that.
No, I'll look at like comments that I'll get, and the worst ones are always like I'll post something on Instagram and it'll get likes, people will comment, and then 3 weeks later, people are still commenting, but now they're mad because it's 3 weeks later and someone sent this to them. They don't even follow me, you know, and they have figured out why I posted it. I'm like, I don't even remember posting that shit. That was like 3 weeks ago. And they're just, and then they're getting into it with other people. Do you ever get that?
Yes, absolutely. And I forgot there were a couple of comics like back in the golden age of all of this stuff when people were being funny who would pick personal fights on random Instagrams. They were fake. They were fake fights. But they were like, oh, I see you commented on this, but why, you know, why do you believe that? And they would have like these, it would be the most innocuous, it would be a picture of five puppies. And then it would get into this huge, and they posted all of these things that they would get in these fights.
ridiculous.
Billy, as always, an absolute delight. We're now at the point in the show, past it because you're so interesting, frankly, where we talk about stuff we're watching.
Yes.
Fun thing to do. What have you been watching, Billy?
What have you been watching if you've had any time?
I watched the first episode of Chippendales on Hulu.
Love that.
We talked about it last week. Love it. Do you like it?
Yeah. Love it. And what's particularly is that I knew enough about it to obviously know where this Star 80 thing, you know, like subplot.
I didn't know
was
that
going.
Part.
Yeah. Oh, I knew it, but I was still in it. Meaning like knowing where it was going, I was that much more interested. That's always like, you never know. Like, it's like, if I know too much about this, am I going to be interested in it? And I was like, because I knew where it was going, I was like that. I like leaned
way in. Well, the minute they
introduced
Dorothy Stratton, I was like, oh my God, he was associated with this. So it's amazing, but keep going.
But I immediately think Bob Fosse, right? And Eric Roberts.
Right.
And Marielle Hemingway in Star 80. And I'm like, oh shit, like this is going to be fucking crazy, you know, and it was. I mean, what an ending to that pilot.
All I can say is keep watching because Kumail's descent into this character, and I don't know how much is he's giving one of the great performances. Like, I'm gonna, I have to like shout him out because
I'm excited, and it's already such a bizarre and unique like anti-hero for like television. Like, I'm totally into it. I watched the two episodes of Willow. I had to.
Oh, I haven't seen those yet.
I've seen the first two episodes.
Is it any good? I remember, like, Willow was the first premiere I ever went to out here.
Really?
I was like,
no, you were at the Willow premiere?
Oh, I love Willow.
I had literally just gotten to LA and a friend was associated and I went to it and didn't love it at the time. So
probably not for you at the time.
I was also very high.
Yeah.
I thought that would help.
I did too.
That would help. Yeah. I like it more than Lord of the Rings. Like I'm a Willow fan.
You're a Willow Stan.
Willow Stan. I'm a Willow Stan. The first episode, there was a moment, the end of the first act, that like I got choked up where Joanne Whaley So you're almost like half hour into this thing, and there's all, you know, it's a huge sword and sorcery and palace intrigue. And then they're like, they start putting together they're going questing, and they kind of make fun of it. It's kind of self-referential in like, that they're putting together this, you know, this fellowship to go. And as they like call their names out, they inexplicably go to stand up next. It's kind of fun. And then they're like, well, we're going to need the help. We're going to need someone's help to find, to find him. And then they're like, we're going to need a wizard. And she's like, I know where you can find one. And I got like so choked up. He's like, I'm like, she means Willow, you know?
Warwick like, Davis, I love her.
Is he back for it? The original, what's his, I'm forgetting
Warwick.
His name. Warwick, is he in it?
Absolutely. Oh, hell yeah.
Yeah, he's
I
in
love
it.
Him. I yeah. love Warwick Davis.
And it's just like, she says that. And I'm like, so at the beginning, I'm like, I'm watching it. It's fun. It's like, you know, it's like a cross between like, you know, sort of a CW version of Game of Thrones. Like, and I'm not sure if it's for me, like I'm there. It's Willow, right? And she says that. And I'm like, got me. You just got it. And the beginning, they create a lot of urgency with this. There's a kidnapping. They got to get this guy. And then the top of episode two stop for fan service. They like it. The whole thing comes to a screeching halt for fan service.
Oh,
like,
that's amazing.
They're with Willow and they have to do all that. And I'm just like, they deliberately kind of like took the wind out of the sails of the urgency, but I'm here for it.
Yeah. So they got the urgency episode one, nostalgia episode two. Hopefully they combine them episode three. Got it.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm hooked. I don't know that it's like the greatest show ever, but it's, I'm in. And we watched the entire first season and into the second. So my wife's very good at this. At like, she'll like kind of preview shit and then be like, this is for you. This is not for you. I'll watch this by myself. Yeah. You know, we'll watch this together. So, but she's very good now at like being my art, my build, like, no. Yeah. And like, and we'll watch like something. I'll be like, you know what? If we watch something together for the first time, I'll be like, this is you, you know, you watch this and I'll, you know, go away. And so she watches this show. She goes, I think you're gonna like it. It's what is it like, The Sex Lives of College Girls or something on HBO.
The Mindy Kaling show.
Mindy Kaling show. And I'm like, really? Like, why am I like, she's like, I think you're gonna, she also watched The Boys on Amazon. And she was right. I love
she's
the
totally
boys.
Right about that.
Love that.
Got me. Yeah. So again, she's always, and so I always have to give it a shot because she's usually I'm like, what do I need to watch a show about the sex lives of college girls? But it is charming and hilarious. The actresses are incredible.
They are good.
The writing is like, I just like hanging out with these characters. Like, it's just this, it's this wonderful world.
So should we report Billy right now? Is that what we
I
need
think.
To
I just feel like, just clock it. Just clock the time code.
I know. I just want to know. It's like,
just mentally,
when
I'm
they
like,
say, like, were there any signs? Well, there was this one thing. We had
all of a sudden we're going to be in a documentary and it's going to show our faces.
No, I was dating somebody who really liked that show and I watched it, and it was sort of toward the end of our relationship. And so I think it colored how I felt about that show more. I mean, I liked it, but it was like, I probably didn't feel fall head over heels with it as much as you did.
But like, you know, and like as a girl dad and like, you know, kind of like, and watching it with my wife, no less. I also thought it was kind of cool how they like kind of turn the male gaze onto the men.
Like, I like that too, you know, actually.
Yeah. Like I'm not into watching a bunch of shirtless ripped college guys, but like, I get why this is like, after years of like, content being made for us, you know, with topless women and all that. I was kind of like, yeah, let him have it, you know.
Of course. So to recap, the two things you're recommending are shirtless college guys and Chippendales. Got it. Okay. And that
and the little guy. And the little guy.
You know what, Danny, it goes double for me. Make that two. You know, like the same
thing. You know, we're all with you. Jenny,
oh my God,
how about
I'm
you?
I'm on a registry now, aren't I?
Yeah, no, you're fine.
You're not the good guy. I've been enjoying White Lotus. Very enjoyable.
I gotta watch this. Is it real? Does it hold up next to the first season?
Okay, so I watched the pilot. I didn't think. I was like, ugh.
That's what I watched. Just, but everybody says it gets great.
Yes, so I'm like, I'm in it. I'm going to watch again the next week. And then it was like all of a sudden something clicked. And then it started, like, it found its rhythm. So I think this Is this Sunday the last episode? I think it might be.
I don't know.
I'm not sure. But
I'll guarantee
yeah, I've been very much enjoying that. What about you?
So I'm like 2.5 episodes in. So I was a big fan on Netflix of this science fiction show, German show called Dark. Uh-huh. I don't know if you ever saw
you
it.
Your foreign shows, you do.
But Dark was, but Dark is like absolutely, especially that first season, mind-bendingly good. It's it deals with it covers sort of like time paradoxes in a way that like is so it hurts your brain. Like I actually had to watch this show with a chart to see who people were and what that affected, and I loved it. It was challenging and smart and brilliantly acted. And that production company has done a new show on Netflix, which is much more accessible and equally like, what the fuck is going on, called 1899 on Netflix. And it's not in German. I mean, it's in multiple languages, but it's primarily English, but there's like Italian, and it's just, I have no idea where it's going. And I'm like totally surrendering. I love when I can watch a show and not know where it's going. So that's the one I'm suggesting this week.
Perfect. I'm going to give that a whirl.
18. I would watch Dark for a season more than anything. That's like,
I'm going to give it a shot.
So, I'm doing it. I feel like I have two new shows now. I'm excited.
Yeah. I love anything with time travel.
And of course, God forbid on Hulu.
And God forbid on Hulu. And by the way, if you're into time travel and it's, I think it also is on Hulu and it's been like for they're promoting it right now. It was on the Sci-Fi Network and it's not. So it's 12 Monkeys, the series. Now, I love the movie 12 Monkeys. This is a completely different animal, but with the same kind of premise. And it's brilliant. It's like just a brilliantly well done show.
You got me with 1899 because like I love and my favorite movie, one of my favorite movies of all time is Psycho, but not for the most obvious reasons. The reason is that because if I were to lock you in a room and you'd never seen it and I showed you the first 5 minutes of Psycho, or really even the first 25 or 30 minutes of Psycho, and the last 5 minutes, you would bet the rent that these are from two totally different movies. There's no way to get there in an hour and 45 minutes. And that's what I try to do with God Forbid. Like, is like, if I should do the first 5 minutes,
do it, by the way.
Yeah, you'd be like, what the fuck? There's no way to get there in an hour and 35 minutes. Yeah.
And the last puff of smoke, for God forbid, before we say goodbye, is this, because you did remind me of this, is that's it. You set this thing up like a fun sex romp in a way. Like, look at what this is. It's a fun sex romp. And then the implications of it all become incredible. So, like, we are... In a weird way, we're all complicit watching this movie of the salaciousness of it. And then it's really, really good storytelling, Billy.
Our friend Todd Shulman at Hyper Object at Adam McKay's company, the executive produced this with us, he says that he calls this work and some of our best work, of which I hope this, God forbid, ranks among, he calls it Trojan horse filmmaking.
It is.
He's like, perfect way to say it. You tempt the audience with the candy and then you slip in the broccoli, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. I got those Brussels sprouts right in there.
Thank you, by the way, for the kind words, and thank you for recommending everybody watch it. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, I think and honestly, we never plan these things to be like hour-long commercials or something. And you can go back and listen. We don't generally do that. But both Jenny and I are like wild fans of this, and it's absolutely so thought-provoking. So there you go. Anyway, thank you, Billy.
Thank you, Billy.
Good night, good cuck.
Yeah.
Good night, and I'm going to go watch someone I care about get fucked by somebody younger and hotter.
classic Thursday for Danny.
Typical Thursday. Thank you, Doing It Nation. We'll be back next week.
Thank you.
I can't promise it'll be a better guest, because how could we do better? But it'll be better. We'll see you next week.